Should you take that?
Yeah.
I'm Allie Grant.
And I'm Jess Yu.
Welcome to Follow Me, your resource for all things influencer.
Brought to you by Be Social Group.
Now, let's see who we're following this week.
When we're looking to work with someone over a very specific topic, it was so much easier just to find a person who was clear about that topic that they were discussing, as opposed to if it was like a lifestyle creator who had 19 different niche and we had to like sort through. So being very clear and visible, I guess, about the niche or topic, those names just constantly popped to the top of the list. We're always the ones being recommended when we like picked a certain topic or niche.
Welcome to the Follow Me podcast, your resource for all things influencer marketing. Today, we are so excited to chat with Jenny Park, the lead of brand partnerships at LinkedIn and part-time TikTok content creator who focuses on personal finance and career tips. Hello, Jessica.
Hello, Allison. You always call me Jessica on this podcast. It's like throwing me off, always.
Does anyone ever call you Jessica?
No, like maybe my parents. We've had this conversation too. It's like maybe my parents when they're like joking.
Oh,
everyone,
yeah, yeah,
when
yeah.
They're like joking, it's like, Jessica. I'm like, I am not a Jessica.
But that you call me Allison in the same regard. Like, it's like, we don't like Allison and we do not like Jessica. We like Allie and Jess, but then we have these like very formal long names that we don't use.
Should we change our names? Formally?
Yes, 100%. I would love to change my name. What are you following this week?
You had a really great follow, I believe, last week that you wanted to share. So I'm going to throw it back to you.
Oh my gosh. Okay. You're right. So I'm going to talk about something that just launched for TikTok as a new way to monetize as a creator. It's called TikTok Series. Have you heard about this? Or just what like I had sent you, probably?
No, I don't think you've sent me this. Do tell.
Well, I attended this webinar that TikTok actually put on to learn more about it, but they were like very serious about it being confidential. So I'm not going to share what I learned on the webinar.
Wait, I'm sorry.
I'm like too afraid. Like the TikTok police will come after me. So I'm just going to like talk about, no, I didn't sign an NDA. I'm just going to talk about what I've read on the internet about TikTok Series. But anyways, it's essentially a way to monetize your videos on TikTok. It allows you to put a paywall up. So you can create longer form video or short form video that consumers, followers would have to pay to look at. So it's kind of like Patreon, OnlyFans, like paywalling certain content. And you can create content up to 20 minutes long. So that's double the time of normal TikTok videos because I think the max is 10 minutes. So I think like talking about experts, which we talk about with Jenny in this podcast, is a very interesting revenue model for people who create expert content. So recipes, workouts, financial tips, paywall that, you can set your rates. And then it's nice having it all in one platform because I feel like a lot of people use paywall in Patreon, and then you have to like get people to go to that platform, sign up. So I haven't seen anyone use it or promote it yet. It just launched like I think last week.
I think Instagram does that too. They do subscriptions.
Yeah, they do subscriptions, which I feel like hasn't really taken off.
I only get a notification when like someone I follow has
launches it. Right. Yeah, I get those
too. But I haven't seen anyone actually like go through with it, I don't think. Or I don't subscribe to anyone. Do you?
No, I don't. But I've seen people, launch them. And then I don't know. It's like, it seems like you have to sort of like promote it a lot to like have it be successful. But I feel like TikTok is a better platform for that type of like content. It's a little bit more like expert driven, like, I don't know. So we will see, but let's get into our guest. Jenny Park leads brand partnerships at LinkedIn and is also a content creator on TikTok, focused on personal finance and career tips. She has worked with talent from household names like Brian Reynolds and Mindy Kaling to digital creators such as MrBeast. Now she focuses on crafting brand partnerships for LinkedIn that help elevate the brand and culture. Outside of her corporate job, she has worked with brands from SoFi to NerdWallet and Rent the Runway to empower other women to build their dream life and become financially fluent. Jenny lives in Orange County with her husband and her dog, Lola. I love this episode, and I feel like it was so easy to chat with her. I feel like she needs to be the third co-host because we had like such a vibe with her. Do you agree?
Such a vibe. The conversation was so good. And she is truly an expert in this field, not only at LinkedIn, leading brand partnerships and what that entails, but also being a micro creator herself. And we kind of like delve into the duality of her two roles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We talk about LinkedIn, how you use it as a business person or a creator and kind of like the ins and outs of its features. And then we go into talking about her as a micro creator, how she's grown her following and how she's monetizing her following, which she is on track to make $100,000 this year with 50,000 followers on TikTok.
That's
hello.
Corporate jobs. Hello.
Yeah. What are we doing? Anyways, let's get into this episode. How are you?
Good. Good to see you yesterday.
I know. It was so funny. I texted Jess. I was like, I just ran into Jenny at Soho House, which is like, that was so random, right?
That was very random, especially because I don't really go there, but I was just meeting up with Shelby, who's another friend who happened to be in town. So it was so fun. It was very serendipitous, but I'm glad I got to see you in real life before this.
I know. I think you said,
oh my God,
I recognized your hair. Like, it was the first thing you said.
Okay, yeah. I meant that as a compliment. You have beautiful hair. It's very distinct on TikTok.
Wait, I was going to ask. I was like, wait, do you guys like, have you guys met in real life before? Like, how did you guys know what each other looks like?
But then we just follow each other on TikTok. But yeah, no, my hair is, it's like, you would recognize it. It's like very, not unique is not the right word.
That distinct. Sounds
like I'm bragging, but distinct. Yes, distinct. Thank you. But that was fun. But yay, we're so excited to have you on and talk about all the things. I would just love to know how you got into the creator economy initially. You have an amazing job at LinkedIn. Like, let's start there and then kind of talk through like your personal success as a micro creator.
So I've been at LinkedIn for 5 years, and right now my job is actually pivoted to be more about building brand partnerships. So LinkedIn with other brands, how do we find ways to maximize relevance and culture, whether it's through like entertainment partners, so integrating LinkedIn into shows and films, or working with other brands who have like aligned values and missions to like amplify what we're doing or reach more people. But the reason why I've stayed at LinkedIn for 5 years is because my job has actually changed like every year, which has been so fun to get to like grow and evolve with the company. So previous to this, I spent a year and a half working on specifically talent and creator partnerships. So building out, how do we onboard creators onto the platform? Who are talent, like celebrities, all the way to micro creators who we want to work with to also help us share LinkedIn message. And my background is not in the creator economy. My background was very much in like brand building. I started out in like CPG at General Mills, like building like Cheerios cereal campaigns, and then helped move over to LinkedIn. And so building blocks along the way, and as LinkedIn started to invest in creators and brands and culture, raised my hand to help connect the dots there. And I think just I had a proven track record of like building relationships within the company and taking on new projects and new types of work that was able to transition as the company has taken on new bets.
I feel like working at like big tech, is that the right term? Like where you're at like one of the largest platforms. There's like LinkedIn, Snap, Instagram. Like LinkedIn is certainly one of them. And I think more recently, we've all sort of seen LinkedIn as a creator-centric platform, which is sort of newer for you guys, right? Can you like chat through that a little bit?
Yeah, I think the specific thing for LinkedIn too is that like as people think about work differently, as people are like, oh, I want to become a multi-hyphenate or I want to start my own company, going to LinkedIn to get information on either like who are people I know, what can I learn, whose job do I want that I can like look up and see, like LinkedIn is a really great place for that. And people are also recognizing that they can share on LinkedIn and it not be a signal that they're trying to look for a new job, but they want to like share what they've learned, their experiences, and kind of like legitimize themselves too, either as like a business leader or as like a thought leader, even just like being vulnerable about their journey. So as over the last couple of years, the economy has changed and we've seen people lose their jobs or people talk about like racial equity in the workplace, like people talk about it on LinkedIn and it's really, really cool. You don't have to just be a buttoned up professional and you can't talk about all these things. So I think that's been really beautiful to see and welcoming other people's perspectives and sharing.
I would also say LinkedIn almost feels like its own separate social media platform. So it kind of, I feel like LinkedIn for me, it blends Instagram and Facebook almost because I see those updates where now I see my contacts and my relationships being vulnerable, like you said, sharing, you know, exciting news that they just got promoted or even if the, you know, they just lost their job, they're looking for work. But I didn't realize when I first joined LinkedIn years and years ago that that would be where the platform is right now. People actually being very vulnerable and sharing other things besides looking for work.
Yeah, it's amazing. My guess is that as the generations are just changing too of what culture is, and as we work from home or different types of jobs, and I think because there is that professional element to it, people are pretty civil and friendly. Like, you're not going to get into like trolling. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
A trolling battle with other LinkedIn folks. Yeah.
Yeah, that's so funny. I turned like creator mode on my LinkedIn, but I don't know what that means. What does that mean? And what do I do with that?
I think and I'm not super well versed to talk about that, but I think it's essentially giving you access to more insights and analytics on the back end of how people are reacting to the content that you shared, or giving you access to different tools. Like, you can do audio events if you want to reach your followers in a different way. Whereas like maybe everyday people who are on LinkedIn, they might not have the need to do like an audio event if they really are just coming to LinkedIn to like post about their day-to-day or look for a new job. So it's kind of giving them new tools to access your audience.
And you think it's like appropriate to sort of share a wide variety of content in LinkedIn? I don't share. I'm not active on it, and I don't really know what to share.
Oh my gosh, Allie, you should.
But like, what do I talk about?
I think the things you share on TikTok of even like what you're looking for as a talent manager, the trends you're seeing in the creator influencer industry, I feel like you've done such a good job already on TikTok of like positioning yourself as that, of like, you know, the insights of the industry. And it could just be taking that in written form if you just want to like take your script and post it, or if you're trying to just give advice to other people. Because I do think that there's a lot of people who are not full-time creators, like myself, who are interested in exploring that on the side as like a nighttime hustle, or possibly moving into it full-time, that could really benefit from like all the stuff you know.
Would it make sense to post your link or your TikToks to LinkedIn, or is that not really the right like vibe?
I think you could try it. It's interesting because you can post videos and text and images. I personally don't really watch videos on the LinkedIn feed. I feel like I read a little bit more or look at pictures. So you could kind of play around and see what people like.
I didn't even know that you could post videos on LinkedIn. Allie, what if you start a new trend on LinkedIn?
We're happening right now.
I'm doing like short form video every day on LinkedIn. Everyone's just like, okay.
Like, get ready with me.
Yeah. Like full fashion and beauty hauls. Everyone's just like, all right, unconnected. Obviously LinkedIn is such a powerful tool for business, right? And like connection and whatever, referrals and all of those things. I think it's such a miss to not be part of that conversation. And I would say I'm not part of it at all. Jess, do you do anything on LinkedIn?
I'm so silent on LinkedIn, but maybe after this call, I can be reinvigorated to like get back in. But I think too, like Allie, as like a founder, and like you've hired numerous people, obviously looking through resumes, what's the step in like the hiring phase that LinkedIn plays into? Do you stalk people's LinkedIns before the interview? Do you even look at LinkedIn pages? Like, what is your view on that?
As a business, we use LinkedIn for all of our recruiting. So we have like a recruiting portal. So Wayne, our HR VP, like can go in and post jobs, and then we can see all of the applicants. But yeah, I mean, I feel like LinkedIn is the first line of like checking the resume, right? Like, that's your resume, your digital portfolio. Like, if you're looking for a job or want to change, update your LinkedIn, because that's what the hiring recruiters are looking at. Like, they're not looking at your Instagram or whatnot. Like, it's LinkedIn 100%. So make sure it's updated. And I guess has like relevant info on it, right?
Yeah, I love that. I was listening to a Life with Mariana podcast a while ago where she interviews other like founders and whatnot too. And they mentioned similarly that they looked at people's LinkedIn, even if they didn't recruit from it, but to like fact check that they had the right relevant experience, or even sending them a message. So I love that that's like a useful tool.
Yeah, fact checking is actually such a good use case for it, because you can put whatever the heck you want on a resume. Like, you can say you've worked at Saks Fifth Avenue as VP of marketing, but what you put on your LinkedIn is like what everyone sees, and also shows who your connections are. So it kind of like validates whatever you're putting in your resume, is a good point. So we're here to just sell LinkedIn today. So
love it. Well, Jenny, is this the right point of view as like consumers of LinkedIn? I know you said you work with brands on incorporating the LinkedIn messaging with like-minded brands and brands that have the same ethos. Can you go kind of more into that subject and like what you do in day to day?
Yeah, happy to. So I sit within the brand organization where really the role is to build like more emotional and relevant relationships with our members. And I think because LinkedIn is a professional community, it's also around helping people feel like they belong on LinkedIn and feel like they belong also in the workplace, like at large. And so there's different like components of that. Like how do we help people feel like anything is possible, that they can reach what they want to do? Or if there's people who feel like they haven't had the right foot in the door or a chance, like how do we help them make those connections? And so my role is in a couple different things. As one is identifying other brands who kind of stand for similar things, and identifying ways of how can we work together to do really cool breakthrough creative or storytelling or create a new tool, all the way to very much like operations internally of how do we build out this function? How do we measure it being successful? What are the different types of tactics out there? I can speak to like one recent partnership we launched. It was with Dove, which is owned by Unilever. Dove has spent like the last 20 years really focused on like changing beauty standards. So their whole platform is around real beauty, really incredible work that they do. One of their pillars within real beauty is to talk about how Black hair is beautiful. And they wanted to kind of go into this next chapter that also Black hair is professional. And they found all these insights that Black hair is perceived to be 2.5 times less professional than other types of hair. And in a certain amount of states, it's still legal for companies to discriminate people based on their hair. And usually that disproportionately impacts people who are Black women and Black men. And so LinkedIn and Dove came together to just even raise awareness of that and also just have this belief that we think everyone should feel like safe and be able to be successful and also like get promoted, advance, whatever, regardless of what their hair looks like. And so we created this partnership where we were one, like encouraging people to like post pictures of themselves, like on LinkedIn to kind of like flip the narrative of just like embracing their hair and owning it and like showcasing it doesn't take away from anyone's professionalism at all. And then we also created 10 free LinkedIn learning courses that were about like bias and how to be a little bit more inclusive to help like recruiters and hiring managers who are kind of like the decision makers at that point who might have certain biases, change the way they think about it. And it was so incredible. I think I spent a day just like reading every single person's post because it was so deeply personal. And so that's like one example. And they aren't always like that, I think, emotional, but it's like an example of how two brands came together to kind of like change something about the workplace and people's lives. And it was really, really cool.
Yeah, that is like so impactful and like such great work. Wow, that's incredible.
It humanizes the workplace a little bit, which I feel like probably 10 years ago, that wasn't the perspective of the workplace where you're able to comfortably say these things and feel these things and be emotional.
So one of LinkedIn's business models is working with brands, and obviously these brands are paying like a media spend or something with LinkedIn. Is that how it's working?
Not necessarily. It depends. There are some partnerships that we do with LinkedIn that are just like value exchange between the two brands where we both commit to creating a certain amount. Sometimes one brand is paying, sometimes both brands are paying. It kind of just depends on the nature of the partnership and who the brand is.
And you said you've worked with like very large talent and creators on LinkedIn, like Ryan Reynolds and Mr. Beast. How do you, in your, I guess that was probably your previous role, how did you support large creators like that on LinkedIn?
Yeah. So last year, one of my main focuses was helping onboard talent who had, or celebrities who had some sort of like business angle component. So Ryan Reynolds was an example. He was one where, as everyone knows, he's not only just an actor, but he also is this like incredible entrepreneur. And he wanted to create a presence on LinkedIn so he could also reach CMOs, CEOs, marketers, all those people. And so we created a strategy to help him onboard onto the platform, have a sit-down interview with LinkedIn News that kind of talked about this new like initiative he was launching or a new company he was acquiring, and gave him some insights into his content. And then also invited him to be a speaker, I think, at a different like conference that we're hosting. But it's been incredible. Like, he's someone who's incredible to see on LinkedIn because he does such a great job of infusing his own personality and style with his business acumen. So he's one example where it was, we worked directly with his team in setting up what that strategy was. And then it's been cool to see him just kind of organically continue to post on LinkedIn and find it to be valuable.
I want to get into now your side hustle, which I think is really interesting for people listening because, you know, you have a full-time job, like a very serious job in corporate America, which probably is very taxing and takes a lot of your time. But you've carved out time to do your side hustle and be a part-time content creator. What gave you that idea? How is juggling both? Let's chat about it.
I think I've always been a creator in some capacity, like way back in the day. Like I overshared my life on Zynga when I was like in junior high, always oversharing life on the internet and trying on different things to see what fits, whether it was blogging at one point. And so actually I turned 30 last year and I was nominated for the Forbes 30 under 30 list and got rejected by the Forbes 30 under 30 list and was, I didn't talk about this actually for like a year, but I was like really sad and devastated about it. I think there was something about this list that I wanted to validate me or help me create new opportunities or like change the direction. And I talked to a friend about it and she was like, I think you're giving this list way too much agency. Like, I think you can create your own opportunities. And I remember in that moment, I was like, you know what? You're right. I'm going to start a new hobby, a new creative thing to kind of like showcase I can do more and explore different ways of what that looks like. And so I started a TikTok literally within 3 weeks of that happening, of trying on like, what are things I'm interested in, like personal finance, career tips, empowerment, like motivation things. I started and it got traction pretty quickly, which was really motivating to see that the content I was creating was like helpful for people or that they actually cared about it. And so I spent a lot of time like on weekends, like filming. I'd film a bunch of videos. Like after I did my hair and makeup, I would like get ready, film a bunch of videos, and then spend a lot of my evenings editing, posting. And I kind of like figured out like what content does better, what content's more my voice that feels authentic to me, and figuring out what I feel good about. And have now created like a good rhythm where I cannot create as much as I did when I started, but I've been fortunate to kind of like work with brands that have helped me make this like a worthwhile, not worthwhile, but like there's something very to be viable. Gained. Yeah, time exactly. Helpful. Exactly.
Yeah, the time that you're putting in. So how many posts do you do a day on TikTok or a week?
I'm also very inconsistent. I could go a week where I post 2 or 3 times. I could go like 2 or 3 weeks where I don't post anything.
Really? And you still see growth after that?
It's interesting. What I found is that if I can get 1 or 2 videos that have a bigger reach, like 100,000 views at least, it actually lifts all the other videos surrounding it.
So true.
And so what I have found and a tip that I heard was that you should recreate your best performing videos. And so sometimes one thing I've done like 3 or 4 times is there's one video that always gets consistently, like I think over 300,000 views. And it's like the 4 types of bank accounts that everyone should have. Or there was another one that was like the best note-taking tool. And I think while they're so basic, I think because it feels so accessible, for some reason, those videos do well every time and it reaches new people every time. So I have found like every 4 months, I'll recreate it or like a version of this. And that'll kind of help spike the new videos that I create.
That's actually such a good tip. And so what, do you just like, you just tweak it a little bit or it's like a different background or you're kind of talking a little bit different? I'm literally going to do this.
Yeah, you should do it. For the 4 types of bank accounts, I think I misspoke about something or someone had a lot of clarifying questions. There were a lot of like same questions that everyone had. So when I remade it, I did tweak it to like address it or be a little bit more clear, but it was the same as that video basically. One time I even just reposted the exact same video just to see, because I do think it reaches new people or people just forget. And there is something about consistent information or being fed the same information over and over that it like finally hits.
I know so many people that do that, that repost the same video that has gotten viral and it goes viral again. If not, like it does better sometimes.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, like me just posting the same thing all the time now. Like I'm so thirsty for these tips. That's so good.
Also, what's interesting is when I first started, I think I thought I had something to prove. Like I think I had to showcase like, oh, this is legitimate information. So I should show you like really in-depth insights or I should give you context on why I'm talking about it. And I realized nobody cares on TikTok. Nobody has patience for that. And actually it's like information that seems simple and accessible, people care about more. So the like I've created multiple personal finance videos. I think why people like the 4 best bank accounts videos, people then watch being like feeling validated, like, oh, I already do 3 or 4 of those. Like, great. I'm in a good spot versus like, this is way too complicated. Not for me. Like I can't look at this yet. And so that was like an interesting thing that I've realized too.
Yeah. I think people want to watch videos that make them feel good, right? Or else why watch them? It's like, they want to feel comforted by the information. I think that's so interesting though, that strategy of like tweaking the video a little bit that have gone viral for you.
Do you record them in TikTok?
I don't. I create everything in CapCut.
You do? How do you do? Can you do green screen in CapCut?
Yes. And I actually like CapCut green screen better. So I record all my videos. And then after, when you go into editing, you can do remove background. And then it removes you. And then you add an overlay. And then you can keep moving yourself wherever. The only bad thing about it is you can't see the green screen as you're talking. So if you use it to like read off something, you can't do it like that. You have to do it post. But I actually like the flexibility. I just like do my script or do my like talking points, whatever. And then I'll go back and I'll add the green screen.
Okay. Cause I like just open up TikTok and start filming. I guess what I struggle with is like, then you can't download it or edit it later, repost it. I mean, you can do the like tick save or whatever.
Yeah,
but whenever you download from those things, I feel like the voice in the video is off. Do you guys get that issue too?
A little distorted.
Yeah, the audio is always synced. The one thing I heard that what you're doing is probably smart is someone said like, do whatever is the most sustainable way to create. And so if doing another app is going to add like one more layer of friction to make it harder to record, don't do it. Like it's easier just to be sustainable. That's one thing I also realized is that when I first started, I tried to do day in the life vlogs. And for me personally, those are harder for me to do. And so I was like, oh, this is like not as sustainable for me. I'm only going to do it now if I enjoy it. Talking to camera is just a little bit easier for me and it's going to make me want to create more. Whereas other people, they find those so much easier than having to do a sit down. So whatever is like sustainable.
Yeah. And I feel like this must be for like kind of everyone. It's like, what is the best format? What is the best like tools to use? I'm not liking like my situation right now. Like I want to like revamp it and rebrand it completely. But I've been enjoying doing it so far. You've figured it out, like kind of the formula that works for you and your audience to get that like virality and to like grow the audience. I feel like I'm just like throwing up content with not a lot of like strategy behind it.
I did that too at first. And one thing I thought about was when I first started doing personal finance, I had a moment in my brain where I was like, well, I don't want to just do personal finance. Like there's a limit to how much I can talk about this. Like there's so many other things in my life I would love to talk about. So I slowly started to pivot, but I did notice it affected like growth and just like how quickly I could grow. And so because this isn't something I do full time, I accepted the trade-offs. Like I was like, I would rather enjoy it right now than grow a ton. And so I kind of go back and forth. And so I did one partnership with Rent the Runway last year when I was just starting to pivot away from personal finance. And that was like the most rewarding partnership at the time because it validated like, oh, I can branch out a little bit if I want to. I don't.
Into other topics.
Yeah. Exactly. But I have noticed that people who stick to one niche grow a lot faster.
Yeah. I haven't like done any other style of content. Like I've not like, I don't know what I'd even talk about, but. That could be like phase two.
Well, I feel like it's like the balance, right? It's like the balance of like what makes you actually go viral, but you have so many interests because like you're human. Obviously, you're not just like a personal finance machine or you're not just like a creator tips machine. But I feel like that's cool. Like when did you realize that were you pitching yourself out to brands or were they kind of coming into your inbox and saying like, we want to partner?
Everything has been inbound so far, which I've been fortunate. The one brand I have pitched myself for and was not successful is Hyatt, just because I personally love Hyatt hotels. I got married at a Hyatt. I'm so loyal to them. And I like
at Hyatt.
Post about them. Yeah, exactly. Every other brand has been inbound. I noticed that when I hit 12,000 followers and I put my email, my bio, that's when brands just started reaching out. And as I continue to grow, the brands have reached out. I think putting the topics that I talk about in my bio plus my email has somehow, I mean, you guys know the behind the scenes probably better, but somehow has gotten my email within the network. And so whether it's from NerdWallet to SoFi to Morning Brew, they've somehow found my content and have wanted to reach out either in using my content, like me posting on my channel or using my content for their paid channels.
As like a micro creator, do you feel like there's more UGC opportunities, or do you feel like you do a lot more like brand partnership or opportunities where you're posting on your end?
It's interesting because I get that question a lot about UGCs, and I realize I think about UGCs a little bit differently. So I do brand partnerships with brands, and I have noticed it's now majority where they want to use a video I create and to use it for their paid campaigns. And so I guess that would be considered UGC. But what I don't do is I don't create content just for their organic channels, where it's like create 5 videos and they'll post organically. It's usually like 1 to 2 videos that I align on a script, or they have a specific campaign, they put paid media behind it. It hits a certain threshold, so they want to increase their paid usage. That's kind of what's becoming more common. And then once in a while, one of the videos or one brand will just want to use my channel for it. And I think most often then they want to turn that into a paid asset for their campaign.
You've been really open and transparent with how much money you make as a micro creator. I think you did a video recently where you talked about exactly how you've made money over the past year, and you had a goal for yourself. Was it $50,000, $100,000 this year?
$100,000.
Which, like, you have 55,000 followers. This is your side hustle, and you're on track to make $100,000 in partnerships. Like, that is incredible.
I feel proud, but I'm also shrinking talking about the money line. Okay, it's interesting because I have met creators who have just been so amazing in telling me like how much money they make and being like, Jenny, it's possible. Like, raise your rates, you can do it. And that possibility was huge for me of being like, the first time I heard crazy numbers, I was like, what am I doing sitting here feeling like insecure about posting? Like, I'm going to go for it. It is interesting. Yeah. And I'm really, really enjoying it.
I don't think people not in this industry, like, they don't realize how much money creators make, or like the potential for these budgets. It's like crazy.
For the right creator. Like, there's a ton of creators out there that have more following than you, Jenny, that like will not hit 100,000 in revenue because of their content strategy, their engagement, their whatever it might be. But I feel like you're being very successful with like the amount of following we have and all of that. But I think for...
Okay, will you tell me? Yeah, I'm curious to get your intake, because people have said that where they're like, I think you're lying because I have more followers and it's not happening. And
no, it's just like creator marketplace interest is like all over the place, right? Like, yeah. And you're saying these are all inbound. Like, if you actually tried to do outbound, because it's clear brands are interested in you, they're coming to you. So if you went outbound to brands that don't know you, I think you'd have just as good success.
My theory was that maybe it's because personal finance and career, those industries have bigger budgets to work with creators, was a hypothesis, or that my content is also very brand safe. Like, I don't really talk about, I don't know, unless things are not, yeah, exactly, that are not brand safe. That would make a brand feel safe to align with me. But what's your take?
We like chat about this all the time, obviously, like as a company, you know, some of our talent on our roster that have like the mid-tier followings are actually, you know, some of the top revenue earners at our company, which is really interesting, which is why we always say it's not necessarily about the amount of followers or the vanity metrics. Obviously, like engagement and things like that, like they come into play. But I think in terms of following count, like we have micro creators pulling in 6-figure revenues. So it's very interesting. I think it's just really about the quality of the content, truly. And being brand friendly is a huge part of that too, because like the more brand interest there is, obviously the more opportunities that you're going to get.
And then my other theory is that we're like in this expert era. Brands want to work with people who are experts and successful in a certain niche or category. Like, I think there's tons of value in that. So like if you're a makeup artist, a hairstylist, or, you know, like you're the top of your class in your industry, I think that's really valuable and just like sexy right now for brands. You know, everyone is creating like this trend content, like chasing trends, chasing virality. Brands don't want to like collaborate with that type of content. They want to collaborate with someone like you, who people are listening to, look up to, like are learning from.
And it brings like legitimacy to their brands too. Like, you work at LinkedIn, you have a full-fledged career in personal finance and career building. So brands align with you on that. therefore their brands will be aligned with like all of those elements.
One thing, if I put my LinkedIn hat now, when I was working with creators and talent, to your point, Ellie, about experts that I'm now connecting the dots on of when we're looking to work with someone over a very specific topic, it was so much easier just to find a person who was clear about that topic that they were discussing, as opposed to if it was like a lifestyle creator who had 19 different niche and we had to like sort through. So being very clear and visible, I guess, about the niche or topic, those names just constantly popped to the top of the list. We're always the ones being recommended when we like picked a certain topic or niche.
I don't know. I think you're onto something. I think that you're going to get to a point where you could probably do it full time. You could live off $100,000 a year. You fully could do it full time. But is there a point in which you want to like break away from your full-time job?
I think that's why I'm also so inconsistent with TikTok, where there's like 3 weeks where I disappear and 1 week where I don't. Sometimes I just have this itch where I want to create. And then I have times when I'm okay putting it away because I am creative, but I think I'm also like an operator. Like I love... Even when I was, so Shelby is a friend creator. Even when I was talking to her, like I just got so jazzed thinking about how she should start pitching herself and things she should do, even besides the content creation. And so I love being able to like think through strategy and operations, and I love working corporate. A lot of the videos I made when I first started was that I was the first one in my family to work in corporate America. And I lived in Minnesota at the time, very white company. Like I felt like such a fish out of water and found ways to be effective in the workplace. And so I love being able to share like the unwritten rules of corporate America. And so I think there is something there about like, I want to continue to be a leader in the workplace and like be the kind of leader I wish I saw when I was younger. But I love being able to have a side platform and a brand. And my ideal vision is to be able to like have both.
I also think too, it's like any other relationship. You can't rely on one job or one relationship to fulfill all the needs. I like that you think of like, I have my corporate job to fulfill those needs. And then I have like my creative side hustle when I need like to scratch my itch.
Keeps the pressure off too. Cause it's like you said, like you don't feel like this, like I have to post every single day because if I don't, then I'm not going to, you know, make rent next month. So you kind of have the flexibility.
Totally. Do you guys know Eva Chen?
No, of her.
Okay. She's someone who I put like on my vision board a couple years ago when I first started, of how she has this like corporate job. I think she still works for a company. And then she has like a brand for herself where she's passionate about like fashion and writing children's books and whatnot. That wouldn't be for me, but she found that balance so well.
Yeah, no, she's incredible. I think she's still at Meta. I actually haven't checked in on that. She was like head of fashion or something like that before. It's also a good point to like find someone that you look up to, like in the industry that's doing it well. That's like a good little tip. But
maybe will get tips from you guys though, if I should start pitching myself. Someone
yes.
Asked me
oh my God. Kid. Always 100%
pitch yourself.
Yeah. Always pitch yourself. Like it's just like go time. You could like double that revenue.
And you know how to pitch yourself too, probably because you were once like LinkedIn looking for talent and like, what do you look for? I think you would do so, so well.
Okay. Maybe I'll try creating like a media deck or something this year.
Yeah. Just a media kit. You can do it on Canva so easily and then just like put in all the details and insights and then just do a little, you know, small little email intro. And there you go. I think I have one on my TikTok that you can copy.
Okay, great. I'll go find that. I saw one video you did, Allie, about the Chrome extension of finding people.
Oh, Clearbit. Yeah.
Clearbit. And then I've seen many people recreate your video. Did you know that?
Yeah. Well, I think I actually found out about Clearbit on TikTok, or it was like on a newsletter or something like that. Do you remember I like emailed the team and I was like, everyone should use Clearbit?
Yeah.
I get like 90% of my information from TikTok, honestly, or Instagram. So I don't know. But someone
I didn't
commented
even know
saying
you.
Like, did you get this from my video? And I was like, I don't know, but like I'm just sharing that I like it and hopefully everyone can enjoy. TikTokers get crazy though.
Okay. I didn't know you at that point, but I felt protective of you being like,
oh,
they're
no.
stealing Allie's tips and not giving her no. any credit.
Jenny's out here advocating for your channel, Allie.
No, that's funny. I mean, honestly though, like maybe I'm not giving credit to someone, so I should like rethink how I got that information, but I have so much information swirling in my head. I could not tell you like where or how I've learned anything, but our whole entire company uses Clearbit. It's like incredible.
Do you guys want to be creators?
like full-time creators.
Like, is part of your thing of being on TikTok that you also want to position yourself as a creator for creators?
No. And someone actually asked me that yesterday. Like, why do you do it? Like, what's your, like, do you want to do brand partnerships? No, I don't want to do brand partnerships. Like my, I mean, that would be nice if something like is relevant or whatnot, but my main goal for it actually is like lead development for Be Social. Like we have had so many inquiries for creators wanting representation as well as brands being interested in our services from my TikToks. Like it's, I've never seen anything like it.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So one, I'm like mildly offended how many times you said no to the idea of being a creator. You're like, no. Definitely no.
Well, I think it's like, it's hard for like someone like Jess and I to like be creators when we like represent creators. Like it feels maybe like icky to me a little bit. Like I have a hard time like being okay with it or seeing if like our talent would be okay with it, I think. I don't know.
I think because, well, I mean, you kind of put yourself in that category of like, you almost feel like you're competing against the talent that you're representing for deals almost. That's how I can see it. But I also don't think like our talent would be like, no one has ever come up to me and said like, Allie, like you're competing against me with your TikTok, you know, obviously.
Yeah. So. And it's obviously like, but I also think too, it's like to, for us to be in this industry and be talent managers in this industry, we're passionate about content creation and social media and like all of these things. So it's like, you wouldn't want me to be like, have no followers on Instagram because I never log in or something. Like I think like, there's
don't
value.
Know how to use it.
Yeah. There's a value to the fact that Jess and I create content online, know how it works, are connected with people at Meta and all these places. Like that's only valuable to the people we represent.
And but, you can like advise better for your clients too.
Yeah. But who knows?
So I've heard from different talent managers or agencies that when they're onboarding a new person, some have said they need to have a certain like revenue threshold. They need to make at least $300,000 before we consider. Some are like, oh, I just love the brand and I believe in their potential. What's your guys' like philosophy in onboarding?
Wait, onboarding talent specifically?
Like signing new talent.
Signing, sorry.
Yeah. So I think there's like two schools of thought here. We do as a company have a threshold minimum that we're meant to stick by. So it's like an amount of money. I don't want to say the exact amount, but a number we look at to see, okay, they obviously have proof of concept, brands like them. We know we can kind of like be additive to their business. But we've also on the flip side had incredible success with signing micro creators and turning them into multi-million dollar revenue makers. So like for me, it's like, yes, we look at the revenue, but we need to look at the full picture and we can't only rely on that.
I also think too, it's like to Ali's point, we've grown with a lot of our creators and have built their revenues up to such a big extent. And like, had we not given them the opportunity to kind of do that with us, then we would have lost out, you know, on them being X creator now. So it is a balance, I would say.
That's so cool. I love that.
Well, this has been awesome. We're like way over time, which is great. So this means this conversation was like really meaty and good. But where can people follow you?
On TikTok, it's Mohe with Jenny Park. And then Instagram, it's mohe.jennypark.
I love it. Thanks for coming on. This was so great. And we will be following all of your tips and tricks from here on out.
Thank you guys for having me. I love your podcast and love being able to come on.